Hi, I'm Jay Sevelius, and Joanne Keatley is the director of the Center of Excellence for Transgender Health here at University of California, San Francisco, and Michael Scarce is here with me also. He is representing the HIV Health Services Planning Council, who contracted us to conduct this needs assessment with transgender women living with HIV in San Francisco. Danielle Castro is also staff of the Center of Excellence for Transgender Health, and like the moderator said, we're sort of a center that does research, capacity building, provider training, and advocacy work on behalf of transgender populations. So basically, the Transgender Women's Needs Assessment was commissioned by the HIV Health Services Planning Council to identify the needs of transgender women living with HIV in the San Francisco eligible metropolitan area. So the eligible metropolitan area here is the counties of San Francisco, San Mateo, and Marin County. And the specific aim of the needs assessment was to guide the HIV Health Services Planning Council in its decision-making process regarding Ryan White Part A service categorization, prioritization, and resource allocation. So Ryan White Part A is sort of the provider of last resort. So when people are falling through the cracks in other ways in the system, Ryan White Part A is really supposed to be able to catch them. So we were really wanting to know how transgender women living with HIV were accessing Ryan White services, or and what kinds of barriers and needs they are facing. So just to give you a little bit of background in terms of transgender women and HIV, compared to other groups, transgender women have higher HIV prevalence rates. The most recent San Francisco County data indicates that there are 1,676 transgender women living in San Francisco, of which 634 are living with HIV, constituting almost 38% prevalence rate for transgender women living in San Francisco. So, you know, there's some indication that those numbers are even a little bit low based on, you know, data collection issues with transgender women. Transgender women also experience disproportionate mortality rates. So in San Francisco, in 2008, they were 2% of all newly diagnosed cases, but they accounted for 7% of AIDS-related deaths. So we see that transgender women are likely to experience disproportionate mortality rates also. Less likely to be on antiretroviral therapy than other groups. And when they are on antiretroviral therapy, they report lower rates of adherence. So they're experiencing a lot more barriers to adhering to their medication even when they are on it. They report less positive interactions with providers than other groups do. So they're having a harder time communicating with their providers and connecting with their providers. And they face culturally unique challenges in accessing services, just one of which is the issue of being both on hormones and HIV medications, and just the fact that we don't have a lot of research to show what the possible interactions might be between hormones and HIV medications. There's a fear among transgender women about what those interactions might be, that it might lessen the effect of the hormone therapy, which is, you know, a very high priority, the transitioning process for transgender women. So that's also a barrier to adherence. So our research methods for this needs assessment, we had a lot of community involvement and council input in designing the study and in accessing the population. We created a transgender women's needs assessment working group, which included community members and key stakeholders, as well as representatives from the Center of Excellence for Transgender Health and the HIV Health Services Planning Council. We held all of our focus groups at the San Francisco AIDS Foundation, which is a very accessible location for transgender women. We held 5 focus groups in the early part of this year. 4 were in English and 1 was in Spanish, so that we could include monolingual Spanish speakers. We had 38 participants total, and there was a $30 incentive. So Joanne Keatley, the director of our center, moderated all the focus groups. She's a bilingual transgender woman of color. So our inclusion criteria were that participants needed to be assigned the male gender at birth and currently identify as female or transgender, 18 years of age or older. We did a self-report, currently living with HIV, and they were needed to be residing, receiving, or eligible for Ryan White funded services in the San Francisco EMA, which is San Francisco, San Mateo, and Marin counties. Recruitment was kind of your classic street outreach, snowball sampling, community-based service providers who were involved with our needs assessment working group. And here are our demographics. Predominantly, our participants were African-American, so a somewhat nice representation from other groups. The majority were ages 50 to 59, which makes sense given the HIV prevalence in San Francisco. In terms of their financial situation, most people endorse the statement, I can barely get by on the money I have, and 30 out of 38 participants reported being homeless at some point in their lives. The majority of people were receiving HIV services in San Francisco, and we found that people who were residing in the other counties tended to report coming into San Francisco for the services that are provided here. So this was a this was how we described the different Ryan White program services. There's actually a really long, very elaborate list of all of the services, but we didn't want to confuse participants too much by getting into the real nitty-gritty, so we tried to collapse them down into the major categories, and we talked about them in this way. And then we did a prioritization exercise where they received five dots and were able to, you know, it's the sticky dot exercise where they could put all their dots in one category or divide them up according to how they viewed what their priorities were. So this isn't really a way of technically rigorously ranking the categories, but we just wanted to see how they kind of came out in terms of the participants. Yes? Yes, yes. Oh, the STAR is the most frequently mentioned categories. So when we went and coded the focus group data, the four categories that were talked about the most were housing, medical, mental health, and case management. So those actually came up in discussion the most frequently, but when we did the prioritization exercise, this was how the dots kind of fell out. So oral health was actually pretty highly prioritized, but they didn't talk about it quite as much as they did case management. Does that make sense? Those were the four most frequently mentioned categories. People talked a lot about those four for somewhat obvious reasons because they're very fundamental services within Ryan White. So I organized data in terms of general barriers faced by people living with HIV, transgender-specific barriers, and then transgender-specific service needs. So these general barriers faced by people living with HIV will be pretty familiar probably to most of you. People talk a lot about the discontinuation and reduction in services that they're facing right now, facing a lot of wait lists, very long wait lists for services, experiencing a lower quality of services than they had in the past. Services that are discontinued, they're finding that they're not able to get referrals for the services that they need. Food banks, there's less food available in the food banks, and people are talking about how that makes it difficult for them to adhere to their HIV medications if they can't eat properly or getting proper nutrition. Housing is an issue. Just, you know, once a person becomes HIV positive, that housing is temporary, and they're having a hard time finding a place to go once that their access to HIV housing runs out. People are interested in holistic care options, but there are not a lot of those kinds of options available. People talked about mental health care and wanting therapy or some kind of ongoing counseling. But most of the time they were referred to psychiatric services for medication instead of getting the counseling that they were hoping for. Oral health care was also mentioned quite a bit, and people finding that even the basic services they're having to pay a lot out of pocket for, and then the results aren't very satisfactory. People also mentioned that sometimes their HIV, that the oral health providers weren't necessarily very sensitive to their HIV status. And that was an issue as well. So some of the transgender-specific barriers that they talked about were low level of provider cultural competency. So even in San Francisco, where we do have a lot of access to training, and there are providers who are well known for being very culturally competent, that's not true across the board. And transgender women living with HIV who are accessing services in San Francisco still find that, especially in the medical, mental health, and case management realms, this is very particularly important in these three realms, because in the realm of medical cultural competency, trans women are really looking to their providers to answer questions about the interaction between hormones and HIV medications. They want to be able to ask their doctor sensitive questions about their transition status and how their HIV medication is going to affect that, and vice versa. It's really important that providers have as much knowledge as possible when treating transgender women living with HIV. For obvious reasons, mental health providers who are providing counseling to trans women really need to be sensitive to, you know, different stages of transition, some of the trauma that trans women often face, issues around family relationships, stigma and discrimination that they're facing on an everyday basis. So if you're working with a transgender woman in a mental health capacity, obviously it's really important for you to have context for what that person is going through. Case management services, it's important that case managers are really well connected in the community and know what referral sources are available to transgender women, who can they refer their trans patients to that are going to do a good job with these particular clients. And so it's important that case managers are connected and knowledgeable in those ways. The coordination of care came up a lot in terms of being on both hormones and HIV meds. They're finding that a lot of times they have two different providers for those two medications, and those providers don't necessarily talk to each other. So being on multiple medications is also just a lot to kind of manage on a day-to-day basis, especially when you might not necessarily have stable housing or a stable food source. And then they're having to travel to multiple locations for all these different appointments and pick up their medications at different pharmacies even. And they're not always sure how much of their medications are going to be covered. Some of the specific service needs that came out of the focus groups were that people were really looking for peer support groups that were trans-specific. There were some support groups that were women's support groups that were inclusive of transgender women, but they found that the issues were really different. They couldn't really relate to each other. They didn't necessarily feel safe in those groups. They didn't necessarily feel welcome, even if they were technically included. They really wanted to see more transgender support group leaders, so wanted, you know, their peers to be trained to be able to lead these support groups. Substance abuse treatment, since trans women are facing very unique issues, that carving out some kind of trans-specific component in treatment facilities would be nice. Legal, changing identity documents is a trans-specific service needs, and safety concerns in housing situations. So this is a quote from one of the participants. I personally feel that it's hard to concentrate on my recovery when I have to protect myself from things that people are saying to me. If there was another substance abuse program that would only focus on trans people, it would be great. And I think that's probably true across the board, not just substance abuse treatment. When somebody's facing constant stigma and discrimination, it's hard to focus on getting the certain proper services that they need. So the recommendations that came out of this needs assessment were that we need to offer more provider training. UCSF is convening a National Transgender Health Summit, the second one this May, there's a lot of provider training that is offered there. Carve out trans-specific components of existing services. So even when it's not possible to create, you know, whole trans-specific service agency necessarily, but especially substance abuse treatment programs, if there could be a trans-specific component, that would be really helpful. Transgender people in peer and professional support roles is really important. And making sure that the agencies that trans women are accessing are fully informed of what's available in terms of referrals. And then creating a transgender resource guide that's up to date and centralized that everyone has access to, providers, community members, in order to keep tabs on what's available. Here's our contact information, and I think we're saving questions to the end. Am I correct? Okay. Thank you.